Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, June 28, 2024. It is a mixed cloud and sunshine day here in Nashville. We had a much-needed rain here this week, and our yard and garden is much refreshed. Life is good. We've been harvesting cucumbers, herbs, and peppers of all varieties. And as always, thanks to Ron Trammell for our jazzy intro music. And a shout out to Ron's wife, Sharon, and best wishes for a speedy recovery from her recent surgery. I'm certainly not the first to observe that we Americans have a challenging relationship with our yards and how to think about them. For many years, the manicured, weedless, and perfectly uniform turf grass lawn with associated pest-free ornamental shrubs was the paradigm. There is, of course, an entire industrial complex devoted to providing products to assist us in making this unnatural scene happen. Machinery and chemicals, for the most part, gas-burning mowers, fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, and irrigation systems. Today, there are a host of issues which are causing many people and policymakers to rethink this traditional yard paradigm. These issues include high costs, wasteful consumption of water and fuel, along with the detrimental environmental effects of yard care products, including unnecessary reduction in populations of beneficial insects and wildlife, along with runoff polluting our streams. On today's program, I have a chat with Extension Agent Amy Dunlap about a program which has been developed by the UT Agricultural Extension Service called the Tennessee Smart Yard Program. Their aim is to assist homeowners with thinking about a practical environmentally sound approach to stewardship of the spaces that surround us. I really think that this program is just right for our times today and worthy of everyone's attention. And so I hope you will enjoy my conversation with Amy Dunlap. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Amy Dunlap, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Amy, it's great to have you on the program and to talk about this not new program, but new to some, the Smart Yards program that's offered by the UT Ag Extension. And we're going to get into some detail about that, although I'm afraid that in 40 or 45 minutes, we're not going to be able to do a great deal of detail. But maybe we can introduce people to this program. And my people are pretty self-reliant. They can get out there on the web and find these resources just like I can. But Amy, as we get started, introduce yourself to my audience.
Yeah, so I'm Amy Dunlap. I am an agriculture and natural resources extension agent with UT-TSU Extension here in Davidson County. So Nashville area, I'm local here. I mostly focus on horticulture. There's other types of extension agents that might focus in other areas, traditionally maybe livestock and forages, but it's reflective of our county here that we're mostly urban, so we don't have as much of that, and most of my job is focused on residential and consumer horticulture. I've been in this position now for a couple years, and a large part of my role is teaching or coordinating the volunteer Master Gardener program, which is also administered and facilitated through the Extension office.
Right. Well, the Agricultural Extension Service is a historical feature of the University of Tennessee and of all the land-grant colleges across the nation that many people who live in urban areas are not aware of. I, I've lived in Sevier County for 4 or 5 years and became well acquainted with all the programs that the Agricultural Extension Service does in rural areas, but they also have programs in urban areas.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a kind of unfortunate or common saying that we're one of the best kept secrets. Especially now, I think it's not many people know about extension or what we do. I myself am from an urban area from Orlando, so my first time hearing about extension wasn't until college, because I went to a land grant university. And so for people that might not know, we are a part of the land grant university system. So UT, University of Tennessee, as well as Tennessee State here in Tennessee. And our role, we're in all 95 counties across the state, we'll have an office, and we're here to get research-based information from the university and out into the community. So we are a free and accessible resource to people that reside in the county. So we don't just cover, even though I'm in the agricultural realm, we also have 4-H youth development programming, as well as family and consumer sciences. So nutrition, canning, preservation, all sorts of life skills too. And then many people do come to know extension through 4-H. So we do have programs in schools focused on all sorts of subject areas, definitely related to ag, but also different STEM areas too. So we cover a wide range of things, and we really are here to be a resource to people to answer questions and to teach.
A couple things in response to that. I have had the occasion of visiting the office of the Ag Extension a couple times. It's been years ago, but I can remember being impressed with all of the materials and literature that were available to anybody that just walked in off the street about such a wide a variety of subjects. So chances are somebody at the university, if you're interested in something, somebody at the university has studied it. And it's the
Yeah.
idea of the Ag Extension is to get that material out to consumers, not just for other scholars and people in scholastic in interested in scholastic ideas, but for practical uses and people for in people's homes. I should tell you, Amy, that I learned about these things very early in my life because my mother is a home economist.
Oh, of
And
course, then
so
that makes sense.
I think at one point in her, she was a teacher in high school teacher. But I think at one point in her training, she had the idea that she wanted to be a home demonstration officer, which is a whole different realm of the Ag Extension. So,
Yeah, it closely aligns with family and consumer sciences, really the same idea and same practices.
And I learned about the home demonstration clubs when I lived in Sevier County, and they were quite active there. Well, in any case, we're here today to talk about smart yards, and I always talk to my listeners about that what they do in their own yard is extraordinarily important and relates to the whole world. So tell us what was the impetus for UT and others to develop this program, the Tennessee Smart Yards program.
So that's a really good point, you mentioning an individual yard and the impact that it has on a larger scale. Our Smart Yards program was started by Dr. Andrea Ludwig. She's a specialist with the university that focuses on water management and engineering. And so this program emulates other programs that exist across the country. So I believe Florida, University of Florida, with their Florida Friendly Landscaping, sort of pioneered or piloted a similar type of program in the state of Florida. And then this program, applies a lot of the same principles relevant to Tennessee here in our state. And then other universities have replicated and adapted similar programs for their states. So it's really that's something not only that's happening here and on a state level, but also a nationwide level as well. A large portion of our streams and water bodies are impaired. And so that's sort of what triggered the need for a Smart Yards program, is to ultimately end up preserving and keeping our waterways clean through a number of different principles and actions that homeowners can take.
And so the fundamental impetus has to do with water quality.
Yeah, spot on. Absolutely. It's
Right.
all about keeping pollutants out of our waterways.
Right. I remember learning way back when the Environmental Protection Agency was first established that, they divided pollutants into point source pollutants, and those are the things that come out of a pipe, into a stream, like a sewer pipe or a pipe or an exhaust pipe at a plant or whatever. But then there's the non-point sources that is agricultural field runoff and runoff that from people's yards and that sort of thing that causes pollution into our streams.
Definitely. It's more nebulous in nature. We don't always know where those non-point sources are coming from. So it's harder to pin down and it's harder to regulate a little bit when you don't know exactly where or how
But we've
much.
known for a long time that the individual yards and homeowners' properties are a major, if not the major, a major factor in pollutants, as a source of pollutants, in Tennessee and around the country.
Oh, definitely. And I think that's it's important to just to notify people of that because people aren't always aware that their yard, they might think it's small or it's insignificant in the grand scheme, but collectively that makes a huge impact, especially here in urban areas. I think a lot of people are surprised to hear that sediment or soil is the largest source of pollutant of pollution in our waterways. So that comes directly from our yards and from our gardens.
So the Tennessee Smart Yards program, what does it offer homeowners as a way of educating them and getting them into the right array of actions to take?
So the Smart Yard program focuses on nine different principles, all designed to keep pollutants out of waterways, and many of them overlapping with landscaping and horticultural ideas and principles. So it is a free online program, that has about a 45-minute to an hour lecture or lesson associated with each of the nine principles. And then underneath each of the nine principles are actions that we correspond with inches that homeowners can take to help ensure pollutants are not ending up in our waterways. And then there's about 72 total actions that people can take or inches that they can get on in order to certify their yard as a smart yard. But they only need 36 of them to actually certify. So hence the name Smart Yard. They only need to do 36 of the 72.
Well, let's go through some of those principles and practices that are being advocated for in this program. I see that the right plant in the right place is like one of the major principles.
That's a foundational principle. It's the first one featured for a reason, because I think although it sounds simple or obvious, it's something that people don't always consider. But prioritizing plants that are native or do very well in our Middle Tennessee environment, ultimately, those plants require fewer resources and inputs over time. So, less fertilizer application, less excess watering, and those types of fertilizer is something that often, ends up leaching into our waterways. So, being cognizant or considering what plants we're selecting for the landscape, but also the way that we group them too. So, the way that we group plants by need. So sometimes, for example, I think one of the actions is putting plants that have similar water needs together. So you're ultimately watering less over time. Those types of small actions, simple actions really are what get people action or what get people inches towards their yard.
Right. And I know that if you go to the website, if you just Google Tennessee Smart Yards, this will come up. There's a database there of native plants that people can peruse and learn from.
Yeah, so the Native Plant Database is a really wonderful resource for people. I think it's another secret that's kept that should not be a secret at all because it's such a good resource for plant recommendations for our smart yards, but also for attracting pollinators and other beneficial insects to your yard, which is usually a pull for a lot of homeowners as well. But I also like to draw attention to the fact that it's kind of a win-win. Putting lower input plants into your landscape is ultimately less work and less money for the homeowner too, because they tend to be more self-sufficient over time and also have less issues. So a plant that's put where it needs to be put or where it's going to thrive is going to have less pests and less disease issues over time too, typically.
That's exactly, and also be more attractive to wildlife.
Which is huge, and that's another principle in the Smart Yards program as well, is attracting or providing for wildlife.
Yes, I see that. And planting the right plants and in the right kind of shape is key for that.
It is. I think so. Part of my role as an extension agent is I'll sometimes do diagnostics for people related to pest or disease or a site visit if it's warranted. And people will often assume that it's a biotic factor causing the decline of their tree or their plant, something insect or disease related. But more often than not, it's a management or it's an environmental issue causing the plant to decline or die over time. So, improper planting practices or placing a species in an area that it's just not going to thrive in is usually what causes the plant to die. So, it's thinking upfront preparation is your best bet there.
Right. If it's a plant that needs full sun and it's planted in full shade, it's not going to ever really work.
Absolutely.
Right. Talk a little bit about the use of chemicals and fertilizers.
So it's the program doesn't say don't use chemicals or don't use fertilizers. We're not trying to say that there's never a use case, but we're trying to prevent the misapplication or the misuse of those things. So making sure that you're getting your soil tested, for example, upfront, and that will give you specific recommendations for what types or the amounts of fertilizer that you should be applying for what you're trying to grow. And same principle applies for using pesticides or any type of insect, chemical controls, understanding what you're spraying for and why, following the label on those chemicals is really key here. I think we have a habit of just applying on a routine or on a schedule just because we feel like we have to. But I think just being more mindful and only doing so when it's warranted is huge.
I attended your Smart Yards Festival couple 3 weeks ago, I guess maybe a month ago, out at Ellington Ag Center, and one of the exhibits had to do with watering efficiently and effectively, and they were promoting the use of a rain gauge, and I just thought it was a terrific idea. Now I don't use one constantly in my yard, but I certainly keep track of when it rains. Tell us about watering practices in Nashville and Davidson County for backyard gardens.
So there's a few as the program, as you've mentioned, it's all about water. And so rain gauges are a really simple way to measure the amount of water that we're getting, so you know how much supplemental watering you should be doing for your plants. So the average that we typically say is plants in the landscape will need about an inch a week. And so having that rain gauge measures how much rainfall is happening. So homeowners really only need to water or apply whatever the difference is. So a lot of times that also is done on a routine or on a very specific schedule, and it's really not always necessary. It's too much water ultimately you're applying that you don't really need to if there's been enough rainfall.
Well, Amy, step in here if I say something wrong. In Nashville, we get about 50 inches of rain a year.
Yeah, I think that is about the average.
And so ordinarily we wouldn't be needing to water if we actually have the rain. Now we've had a period of time here over the last several weeks where we have had a deficit of rain. All things being equal, watering shouldn't be something that is necessary all the time.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It depends on the time of year. So I think October is one of the drier months of the year. And obviously, it's really hot during the summertime. That might warrant more watering. But it's not always necessary. And a healthy, established plant shouldn't really need a lot of supplemental watering. Maybe within the first couple of years of its life, as it's getting adapted or dealing with transplant shock, you might need to apply extra. But kind of goes back to the native plant recommendation is native plants particularly will not need supplemental watering over time because they're well adapted to the environment.
Yeah, and that's been my experience in my garden. Now my vegetable garden definitely will need supplemental watering from time to time.
Oh,
But
sure.
my landscape plantings, the native grasses, the native flowers, wildflowers, the flowers that attract the pollinators and all that kind of thing. And overwatering will harm them more than it will help them.
Oh, absolutely. People love their plants to death. They just want to throw, all different things at them, to help them thrive. And a lot of times those things are what end up being their detriment.
Right. And I guess the same is true, has to do with fertilizer. I very rarely use fertilizer in my garden, except in my vegetable garden. I will use it very lightly. But I find that the native plants that I have don't need it.
There's to your point about, a vegetable garden is a different matter. A lot of fruit and crops will need extra fertilizer, but speaking related to landscape plantings, they should not, a lot of the research I've heard or read recently will say don't fertilize a new planting or a new, woody or tree in the environment, because what that does is it encourages them not to expand their roots into the native soil. It kind of sets them up front to think that they've got plenty of nutrients and they don't need to invest in expanding their root system and developing a healthy root system. So ultimately, you shouldn't be fertilizing because it kind of gives them a false idea of what's out there. So helping them for the long term, just not applying fertilizer up front.
Let's talk about water some more. And I know that you all are encouraging people to use rain barrels and to construct when you can swales in the yard and rain garden type features in the yard. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Metro Water Services, they're a huge partner for us on the Smart Yards program here in Davidson County. And they have an annual rain barrel sale, so that's a good opportunity for people to get them should they want them. But they collect rainwater that can then be used to apply into the landscape rather than having to, spray with a hose. You can use whatever you've collected in your rain barrel. So it just saves that resource there. And is a good opportunity for people. And to your point about rain gardens, those are a really good opportunity for collecting water that might normally pool in a depression in the yard or in the landscape. You can actually utilize that space to put plants that are able to tolerate higher levels of water, and to establish, a retention zone that way.
I noticed in the literature that you're encouraging people to make sure that the downspouts of their around their house from their gutters are not plumbed directly into the storm sewer program, but the water is left to disperse out onto the lawn or the property in a natural sort of flow.
Yeah, that's correct. It kind of helps slow the flow of water so it's not, just shooting directly down or creating areas of erosion. It tends to work better if you're not doing that.
Right. Now let's talk a little bit about pests, the management of pests in our yards. How is that related?
So a lot of times, I always say if your plants are being fed on or preyed on, then they are contributing to the wider food web as a whole. So sort of reframing what we consider a pest and what we're tolerating in our yards, understanding that if you have If nothing is being fed on, then odds are it's not really contributing to the wider food web as a whole. But also thinking of pest management. So a lot of times people will start applying and start spraying chemicals when they don't really know why they're spraying or what they're spraying for. And a lot of times the chemical they're spraying doesn't even target what's actually out there. So getting people at first to upfront identify what is it I want to get rid of? What is the pest in the landscape? And is intervention or is chemical control really necessary here? So pest populations will fluctuate anyway throughout the seasons and throughout the years. So sometimes our plants can tolerate a certain level of damage, feeding damage, and we don't always need to apply chemicals because what happens if we're applying excess is that will run off into our waterways, and pollute our waterways. So to your point about the downspout, the higher volume of water that's flowing directly down is going to pick up that excess fertilizer and straight into our waterway. So just thinking, applying when necessary and reframing how we apply.
You mean if a bug eats a hole in my plant, it's not necessarily a bad thing?
That you're right on the money there. It's not always a bad thing.
Well, you're talking about reframing, and I think that's a good way of putting it. Don't we need to start thinking about these bugs as bird food?
Yeah, a native birds will eat native insects that will eat native plants. I mean, it is all an established food chain, and they all rely on one another. So,
I suppose
learning to be
there
grateful.
comes a time when a pest can be so overwhelming that there needs to be something done about it. But
Yeah, I mean, especially invasive pests and insects that are wreaking havoc on the landscape because they themselves are not, native to the landscape. But certainly there are use cases for intervention or for management. It's
like
just
the emerald
sometimes,
ash borer, for example.
yeah, for
Yeah.
example, that's a really good one
Right.
to list.
Right. And there are pathogens that attack even our native plants, I guess is the point there. Even our and I see you've got a beautiful dogwood tree in the picture behind you. Our native dogwoods are having some trouble too with some pathogens.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Cornus florida is particularly susceptible to anthracnose. And so there are definitely times when we are going to want to apply or at least, preventative measures. But it's just getting people to think, hey, what am I spraying for? And when too. A lot of times when you apply these chemicals is relevant to the level of effectiveness it has. So sometimes we've missed the window and we're not helping anything at all at that point.
And let's talk about pollinators. And this seems to be a popular topic these days in people in gardening. There's a relationship between the use of these pesticides and the pollinators.
Yeah, that is dependent. A lot of chemicals or some pesticides will say on the label that it can harm some of our native pollinators or bees. And so that's why applying during certain times of the day, if you're going to apply, can help. So when the bees are not out active in the landscape or feeding and on pollen is a avoiding that time of day or avoiding things that you might if pollinators are a benefit for you or are something that you're trying to attract, maybe then not using those products in your landscape.
So, Amy, as a program, how is it that the average citizen ties into this program? How does the average citizen take advantage of this program? Where is the place to start?
So this is all about the average citizen. We would right now our best mode of advertising or advocating for the program is just by word of mouth and by getting our neighbors and our friends involved. So the best place to start is Tennessee Smart Yards online website. I'm sure you'll be providing the link. I don't want to get it wrong by saying it and then not having it right, but I think it's Tennessee Smart Yards dot ten
You
or
can't
I'm
go
not
wrong if you
exactly
just
sure.
Google search Tennessee Smart Yards, it'll come up for you.
Yeah, so that's the online website. It's very easily laid out. You know, this is where you start. This is point A. There's multiple checklists and rulers to help people measure what actions they're already taking and what actions they would like to take in the future. And then they can jump into doing the lessons on those nine different principles. So they can do them on their own time, at their leisure, at home, or wherever they where they can access them. And so then once you've gone through all the videos and done each different, you know, you've achieved your actions necessary is when you would go online and actually fill out the form saying, "Hey, I've certified my yard," and we'll be notified of that.
Yeah, so there's a set of nine different videos, and I've not seen each one of them in full, but scanned them, and each is about 35, 40 minutes in length, and some bona fide expert from the university campus is talking about each of the subjects that we've talked about today, you know, from the standpoint of water conservation or the use of chemicals, you know, the selection of the appropriate plant species and that sort of thing. There's a lecture, 30 or 40 minute lecture about each of these subjects that they would like you to look at. And then you certify that you've seen that and done certain activities in your yard. Then what happens?
So once you certify, you go into our statewide database as a certified smart yard. You have access to our monthly newsletters and resources as a part of our Tennessee Smart Yards, you know, statewide community. Here in Davidson County, you do get an official smart yard sign for free. And you also get some fertilizer from Music City Gold fertilizer from Metro Water Services. And so then, you know, you are
And that
recognized
comes from
as
the compost. Is that what I'm remembering?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it
Okay.
does. It comes from Metro Water Waste System. Julie Rebelia, who's the Smart Yards lady or one of them here in Davidson County, knows all about that, and she's with
Okay.
Metro Water.
Okay.
So she's the one that
So
delivers all that good stuff.
if you complete the program, they give you one of these handy little signs to put up in your front yard.
Yeah, the sign is an old-fashioned way to recognize, hey, this is what I'm doing, and to get people's attention. Hey, what is that? You know, how do you become a smart yard? How do you do that? Or basically to spread awareness for the program. But also another function of it is to indicate, hey, if this is a smart yard, this is what I'm doing. And a lot of times homeowners associations or groups will think, hey, it's just an unruly space. It's not being managed, but drawing awareness to this is intentional. This is something I'm doing as a wider movement.
So tell us a little bit about the status of the program now. Have you had a lot of takers for this?
Yeah, I'm really proud of Davidson County because we are the largest, you know, we have the most smart yards across the state, which makes sense. We are here in an urban area, but we've had, you know, I don't know the exact number, but we have a few hundred, I think, certified smart yards or close to right now. So we're growing each year and gaining momentum, and then the festivals really help with that as well. So Knox County had the first Smart Yards Festival, and then Davidson County the second. So we're working on building and growing, and then the second part is Smart Yards communities. So we have several here in Davidson County as well, that focus on, you know, communities coming together to certify. It doesn't have to be geographic, so it can be a neighborhood. It can also be a business that might have multiple locations around the
Oh, I
county,
see. I see.
certifying as an official community.
Yeah, one of the garden clubs in my area here in Green Hills is really big on getting its members involved in this program. So I think if you're involved with a gardening group, this would be a great activity for such a group.
Yeah, I would say I do public speaking engagements a lot of times for garden clubs, and I think smart yards is probably my most requested topic. So what you're hearing today and what you would hear then is a high level overview or you know of what the program is, but those videos to your point do go really in depth on each of the principles.
So tell us just in closing now about the Master Gardeners program and what relationship do they have with this Smart Yards program, if any?
So they do have the Master Gardeners. A lot of people might have heard the name of what it, but might not be aware exactly what it is. So Master Gardener program is a volunteer training program. So people take 40 hours, 40 plus hours of education in the spring, and then they do 40 hours in that first year of volunteer service work, largely around education. So sharing the information that they've learned through the class with the community at large. So essentially it expands the impact of the extension office and the reach that we can have.
Right.
And so not only do they get a lot of education up front about smart yards and sustainable landscaping principles, but then they go off into the community and they might teach doing different demonstrations or doing, they helped tremendously. They really hosted the Smart Yards Festival. So that was Master Gardener volunteers at the event helping with the booths and answering questions. So they really helped to get the word out there and to teach people on how they can do this effectively.
Super. Well, Amy, thank you so much for being available to do this program today. I hope that my listeners will take advantage of it and get in touch with your office through the mechanisms of the internet.
Oh, absolutely. We're always here to help, and I'm very grateful that you had me on here today and that you are an advocate and a proponent of the program. It's great to be here. So thank you.
Super. Well, thank you, Amy.